This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Hello and welcome to my Bhutan series from my trip there in December 2025. I spent 10 nights and 11 days exploring the country with Breathe Bhutan, who created an incredible itinerary that I'll be showcasing throughout this series. Across these episodes, you'll hear interviews with local people, immersive experiences from the activities that I took part in, and solo episodes where I break down every detail of the trip. I chose Breathe Bhutan because of the pride they have in offering truly authentic experiences, and trust me, this journey was exactly that. In the first episode of the series, I sit down with Ugyen Rinzen, a resident of Thimphu who's originally from Paro. I first met Ugyen on one of my first nights in Bhutan during a welcome drink and dinner at his daughter and son-in-law's home. That evening, I also met the wider Breathe Bhutan team, including Kinley, who owns the company. Ugyen and I ended up talking for hours over a few beers about life, Bhutan, and the world, and I instantly knew I had to get him on the podcast. He has previously been interviewed by the BBC and brings a huge amount of wisdom, not just about Bhutan, but also about Buddhism and life in general. In this conversation, we explore Bhutan's history, unpack Buddhism from the perspective of someone who's learning it for the first time, and finish with wide-ranging discussions about life. It's a truly captivating chat, and honestly, we could have gone for hours. Anyway, let's begin with the interview with Ugyen. Enjoy. Welcome to the Winging It Travel Podcast, your weekly ticket to the world, dropping every Monday and hosted by me, James Hammond, proudly part of the Voyascape Network. This is a travel podcast that throws out the itinerary and dives straight into the raw, real, and unpredictable essence of global exploration, chasing moments over milestones, those spontaneous encounters, immersive sounds, and unforgettable stories. Whether I'm hiking up volcanoes in Guatemala, or camping under the stars in British Columbia. I've met incredible people, seen breathtaking places, and collected unforgettable stories. I now get to share them with you alongside some of the most diverse and well-traveled guests from around the world. Expect engaging conversations that bring fresh perspectives and inspiring travel tales. There are also raw, reflective solo episodes where I share personal insights, practical tips, and honest stories from the road. This is a podcast for travelers, dreamers, backpackers, and anyone who's ever thought, "What if I just went for it and traveled?" If you're looking for stories to tell, tips to share, and experiences to inspire, then you're in the right place. There's so much travel content coming your way, it might just spark that trip you've been dreaming about for years. You can find Winging It and more fantastic travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com. The link is in the show notes. Let's go and explore the world. Hello and welcome to this week's episode. I'm joined by a very special guest, my friend here, Ugyen Rinzen, and he is from Bhutan. And today he's going to talk about Bhutan as a country and Buddhism. So I've got some questions for him. They're not too hard. If you have a basic understanding of both of them, you should get a better understanding at the end of the episode. And hopefully we'll learn some interesting facts. So again, thanks for coming to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, James. I'm really excited to be talking with you and sharing whatever little I know about Bhutan and Buddhism.
Now, that's unfair because I spoke to you last night for many hours.
Yeah.
And we learned some stuff.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I'm going to sort of do half and half, really. So Bhutan, a lot of people don't know much about Bhutan. Right. So it's like a crash course and a starter pack for Bhutan. And then I'm going to ask some Buddhism questions because it's linked heavily together, right? First of all, tell me about yourself. Where are you from in Bhutan? And growing up, what was it like?
I'm from Paro, Bhutan.
Yeah.
And I actually was born in Punakha, which is in another district.
Yeah.
And my schooling, right from primary until high school, I did in Paro.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on to do my degree course in the East. That's called the only college then. It's called Sherpa College.
Yeah.
So I've undertaken a bachelor's degree in biological sciences.
Mm-hmm.
And so later on, after I joined my service, then I got a scholarship to British government scholarship to go on to pursue a master's degree in food technology in United Kingdom.
And that's in London, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And for life growing up in Bhutan, we do hear a little bit about the past being you're sort of closed from most of the countries around you and around the world.
Yeah.
Is that true? And how much did you know about the outside world before you went to London?
Very limited, I must say,
yeah.
Because as you know, television and internet was only opened around 1999, I must say.
Mm.
Yeah, so until then we had the radio and maybe like video,
mm-hmm.
kind of recorded movies or something like that we can play. Otherwise, we had access to magazines and newspapers, but even newspapers were like government-owned,
mm-hmm.
only one, and we had one national radio.
Yeah.
So that was about it, actually.
Why do you think it was so closed? Like, why did it take such a long time to open up to the world, Bhutan, that is?
The way I see it, and when I reflect, I think it was a very wise idea. It was very wise decision, rather,
mm-hmm.
because we are hemmed in between two giant countries, very, yeah. very big, culturally, socially, economically, militarily.
Mm-hmm.
So we could have actually been consumed by the culture or, you know, exposure to those two countries, as well as the floodgate of information that's going to come up from the West anyway.
Yeah.
So therefore, until our own media, our, you know, language and all those things were ready to counter those, if you had opened, then we would have really gone wrong in a big way.
And do you think that's why so many people want to visit now? Because you have preserved your culture for so long that even today, even though you've been open for 25, 30 years, uh-huh. it still feels like, for me, that I'm going back in time.
Right. Human beings generally, I think, mm-hmm. From the number of tourists that I've met so far,
yeah.
I think this is the catch
yeah.
for them to come to Bhutan.
Yeah.
Because the ideology of gross national happiness,
mm-hmm.
so people-oriented development, rather than material-oriented development.
Yes.
So this is, now we see that over the last, I must say, maybe 3-4 decades of economic development in the West,
yep.
you know, since the Industrial Revolution, or you may like to call, the world is, in a way, the general mass is not getting any better.
True.
Yeah, so there's always some dissatisfaction, discontent. Mm-hmm. There's always this economic gap between rich and poor.
Yes, it's always.
It's never, never closing, no matter, you know, what level of education, the curriculum, what you may like to put, or political manifestos or whatever, it doesn't seem to correct that somehow.
And I'm not picking on one country here, but India, for example.
Right.
Over 1 billion people, I think mm-hmm. half the country mm-hmm. or below, just below half are in poverty.
Right.
And you think of how many people that is.
Well, yeah.
That's like 500 million.
Yeah, yeah.
That is, it's crazy when you think the numbers, right?
Sure,
but then
sure.
the other half are so uh-huh. well off, or not rich, but you know, they're mm-hmm. very comfortable. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're right. It's a strange dynamic that mm-hmm. we have at the minute. And India's not the only place. I'm just giving an example, right?
Not really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Bhutanese culture.
Uh-huh.
Give us an indication, like a high level, like paragraph of what you say Bhutanese culture is.
I would say like Bhutan derives its thought process mainly from the Buddhist teaching.
Yeah.
Buddhist teaching of non-harming, harmony,
mm-hmm.
peace, tranquility. Therefore, we are in harmony with nature. We are in harmony with our neighbors. And especially if you talk about the Mahayana view.
Mm-hmm.
So Mahayana view is like the others are considered more important than self.
Yeah.
So that is a direct threat to the ego.
Yes.
That crushes
yes.
the ego.
Yeah.
Because we think that life is interdependent. Whatever phenomena arises is interdependent.
Mm-hmm.
So we depend a lot on others. Even to make a cup of tea, actually the ingredients comes from all over the place.
Yeah.
All over the place in the world. The tea may come from India.
Mm-hmm.
The milk powder may come from China.
Mm-hmm.
The sugar may come from Brazil. So, and then it may be made by somebody else.
Yeah.
And the cup may be made in, you know, Italy or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
So you really cannot think of man in isolation or as an island.
Yeah.
So therefore, interdependence. So in this modern times, as we go embark on the 21st century, we still see that the virtue of the old age-old ideas and theories.
Mm-hmm.
Beliefs, I yeah. must say, yeah.
And we're going to come on to Buddhism a bit later.
Yeah, sure.
A few more questions about Bhutan. that does reflect in the people. The people I've met obviously are very nice, very welcoming. They help you out. They speak English as well, which is great for a tourist because that's probably the main language, right? How does Bhutanese see the rest of the world? Bhutanese kids or younger generation, which countries do they like the most from the outside world? I know that they're obviously proud of their own country, but is there strong influences, you think, from other countries and into their lifestyle or into their interests?
I must say it's varied, actually. So some youth now, they say, are attracted to K-pops, Korean pop.
Oh, Korean, yeah.
pop.
Yeah.
And in terms of, there are also influences from the YouTube. Some are creative, you know.
Yeah.
Some are coders, programmers, you know. Some, they take interest in AI, development of AI. And then, of course, now there is this for college graduates or who have completed their degree courses or whatever, because the job market here is limited. So therefore, there is a substantial amount of youth actually looking for joining their friends or colleagues or their cousins in Australia or America or the Middle East.
Yeah.
So that's the trend as of now.
Mm-hmm.
As of now, but I would like to think that it's a short term issue.
Okay. Yeah.
Because no matter whatever it is, at the end of the day, you know, Bhutan is always a safe haven.
Sure.
So they would definitely, even other day, yesterday evening, I met a couple who has just returned back from Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Who, after having spent around nearly 12 years.
Oh.
So they probably made some realization that home is always a sweet home.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, a lot of Bhutanese are in Australia.
Yeah.
Is that the biggest population outside of Bhutan, do you think?
Yes. Especially in Perth, they say.
Yeah, Perth. Yeah, it's such an interesting place.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously you might be thinking, oh, they can go to Perth, they speak English. So I want to ask, you can speak Greek English. A lot of the population speaks English.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because it's taught in school?
Yep. Because English is the medium of instruction in Bhutan, in Bhutanese schools.
Yeah.
Even as, you know, when I began my primary education, we learned all the subjects in English. So though we do not really claim that we are better off now, then the younger generation were my grandchildren, for instance, like even before they're into school, they're very fluent and their vocabulary is so great.
I met one of your grandchildren last night, the little girl, she's like 9 or 10, speaks perfect English.
Sure.
I find that incredible. Yeah. Amazing. I'm going to ask you for some of your favourites before we go to Buddhism. So what's your favourite area of Bhutan that you like to visit and maybe someone should visit if they come to Bhutan?
For me, I'm always an outdoor kind of person.
Yeah.
I like the mountains. I love the lakes and the peaks and the landscape.
Yeah.
And also the lesser visited remote areas, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which part of the country is that? Is that like east?
It's like the mountain. It's ranges from the west all the way to the east.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're just hugging the mountains.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of mountains, right?
And also the nomadic people.
Yeah.
Yeah, nomadic people.
Yeah.
Up in the north. Yeah. They're
okay.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What is your favorite Bhutanese dish to eat?
Now it may sound a bit unnatural, but I would still think for me it's imadati,
which is like chili
cheese. Yes,
yeah, I've had a lot of that so far.
But
it's
not
good.
Not that stingy one, but a milder one.
Okay.
Yeah, with little cheese and not so oily.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
What about a Bhutanese drink? Could be alcohol or soft drink.
For me, though it's not considered very healthy. But there, I love the fermented drink, but that's not distilled. So it's almost like beer, but not carbonated. So we call it Singchang or Pangchang.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you give us a couple of phrases in Bhutanese that people should learn to come over here?
Oh, well, I think Katinche is thank you.
Yeah.
Lasso is like please or. Also, in a way, very honorable way of saying yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And lastly, if you're going to sit on a mountain and watch a sunset or sunrise, where in Bhutan is that?
Well, traditionally, also, I think it's been some kind of a recommendation, really, for practitioners of the highest Buddhist teaching.
Mm-hmm.
They have a practice called sun gazing. So there are two famous places from where people were, adepts were, the practitioners were, recorded to have actually disappeared. They have attained rainbow body.
Okay.
So they have, it dissolved their, that material body, and then, it became light body.
Wow.
So the places, one is in Bomdang called Tapaling.
Yeah.
And one is in Paro called Bemri.
Right.
So these are like, I guess they have a perfect vantage point for viewing the sunrise as well as the sunset.
Sure.
Yeah. But you could also gaze the sky.
Yeah. Amazing. That'd be incredible, right?
Yeah.
So I was flying from Bangkok on the plane.
Yeah.
Left-hand side. This is a top tip that I got given and I pass on. Because from Bangkok into Bhutan, on the left-hand side, you have the Himalayas.
Yeah.
And you can see, I saw Everest in the background, and then Kanchenjunga, which is an incredible sight. So that's my top tip for Bhutan if you're flying in from Bangkok.
Uh-huh.
Left-hand side of the plane, if you're flying out from Bhutan, right-hand side.
Right.
But I think on the plane, people couldn't believe they were seeing the Himalayas, mm-hmm. which kind of suits what you say about the mountains, right? It's just a breathtaking area, isn't it, of the world?
Uh-huh.
And I do wonder, the Perth thing makes me laugh because the Bhutanese go to Perth, which is completely different.
Yep.
Like, does that make you laugh? Does it make you think, like, why Perth? Or do you think people just want to have a beach and some hotter weather? Like, what's the thing there?
No, I guess, like, the catch may be quite different, you know?
Right.
So Perth may be economic reasons.
Really,
nothing to do with
any
view, something breathtaking of that sort.
Yeah.
So therefore, because many Bhutanese are there, they can help each other. So there's a good network of Bhutanese there. So I think that is the primary reason why they are there.
Yeah.
And things can be like short, it can be divided into short, mid-term and long-term.
Okay.
So I'm of the belief that not many people will stay behind.
Okay.
In the end, they will come back.
Yeah.
And I'm quite optimistic that youth, especially from 18 to 27 or even 30, once they go there, there is this value for time and the dignity of labor, all those things which are fairly dormant here will be picked up to a greater degree.
Yes.
So if you are losing one youth today for a few years, when they come back, they will multiply into five skills, you know.
Yes, yes.
So they know it will be very difficult to reverse the perception and the kind of culture they come back. So they will be more productive, more creative.
Mm-hmm.
So if we lose 65,000, for instance, today, so I think that will go into fourfold productive when they come back.
Yes, makes sense.
So therefore, like we will have more motivated, inspired and hands-on kind of youth who will form the new labor force or the creative force in the country. So I would like to look at it that way.
Yes.
Maybe temporarily it looks like a vacuum.
Yes.
But it's not. So I'm also quite concerned that people are capturing in a negative way. It cannot be, because, you know, if you train some, if you go to a, you know, highly premium training institute or college, you know, you learn some basic skills. But as human beings, how we are, basically, our memory is short-lived, you know.
Yeah.
You cannot translate whatever you learn into skills that can create, a job or, you know, new products or things like that, you see. But a culture or a discipline that you have learned through 5-6 years, when they come back, they cannot forget that.
No,
they will be in that mode and they will try to. But if you, as opposed to that, if you see the youth here generally, they're quite laid back. You know, they won't want to work, you know, in more innovative or creative way. So therefore, I look at that way.
So you're saying you almost need people to go away for a short time to come back.
Especially youth, you know.
Yeah, youth.
I really don't know about the people beyond 35. I really don't know.
Yeah.
That's a different. But for me, as someone who is optimistic, who look at everything from an optimistic angle, a viewfinder, you know?
Yeah.
So I see big promise for Bhutan.
That's great. That's a positive.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I love that. This guy's positive. I love this guy. Right, we're going to go into Buddhism. So my questions are going to be very simple.
Yeah.
Because I don't know much about it. I'm learning on this trip as I go.
That's all right.
And I'm shamelessly going to read it from my pad because it's hard to know.
You're welcome.
The first question is, Buddhism in its simplest form, if you could explain what it is.
Well, let me come straight, give you the straight answer.
Yeah.
So, Buddhism condensed in one para would be like, you will not commit any non-virtuous deed.
Okay.
You only do virtuous deed, second.
Yeah.
And third is, you will tame your mind. Okay. So, mind is the center of Buddhist culture, Buddhist philosophy, Buddhist life. So, yeah, you don't hurt others.
Yeah.
Okay? And then train your mind in two simple terms. Do as much good as possible to anyone.
Yeah.
Don't harm anybody. And train your mind. Tame your mind.
Okay.
So this is the essence of Buddhism in short.
Next question would be, it sounds more like a spirituality rather than a religion, or is that unfair to say? Would you describe Buddhism as a religion?
Well, not in the context of, from a theistic point of view.
Okay.
Where you see an external God who condemns you or who blesses you.
Yeah.
So it is mainly, Buddhism allows the flowering of, blossoming of individuals' optimum capacity, potential. So for that matter, any human being can realize the full potential of oneself.
Yeah.
If you focus on your mind. The capacities of the mind, the potencies of the mind.
Yeah.
So it goes beyond the normal five sense organs.
Okay.
It goes beyond right and wrong. It goes between light and darkness.
Okay.
So it's always a blend and amalgamation of, you know, a wave between dance between male and female and right and wrong. So therefore there is no extreme, you know.
Mm.
So that's why we call it a middle way.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Just a quick pause in the episode there. If you're enjoying the podcast and getting value from these conversations, one of the biggest ways you can support Winging It is by leaving a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. It generally helps the show reach new listeners and keeps the podcast growing. And it's free and it only takes a few minutes. Alternatively, if you'd like to support the podcast in another way, you can also buy me a coffee over at buymeacoffee.com/winginit. It's a simple way to help cover hosting, gear, and the time that goes into creating these episodes. And I seriously appreciate every coffee that I receive. It's only $5. You can also head to winginittravelpodcast.com to book your travel through my affiliate links. That just means that if you book your flights, accommodation, or travel gear through those links, it helps support the podcast at no extra cost to you. And it allows me to keep sharing these stories from the road. And finally, if you know someone who loves travel, storytelling, or meaningful conversations, please share the podcast, whether that's by word of mouth, sending an episode to a friend, or posting it on social media. It really does make a huge difference. Right, let's get back into the episode. Mm-hmm. And Buddhism is obviously dominated by Buddha. So who is Buddha?
Mm-hmm. So Buddha, actually, you know, many people nowadays seem to confuse seeing that the classical Buddha who passed away 2,500 years ago, who came with he is one manifestation in the human form.
Yes.
So Buddha is actually a state of mind, a state of awaken.
Yeah.
If you are totally free, you are not afraid of anything, you are gone beyond hope and fear. That is the real state of Buddhahood.
Ah, okay.
That's the pure dimension, the primordial dimension.
Yes.
Because we talk of Buddhism in layers. So something very wealthy, rich, you know, with gems and jewels and all this limitless wealth you can have, or AI, or even like triple fold of AI, whatever, in 23rd century. I mean, all that kind of thing would be the next dimension, which is called the wealth abundance dimension.
Okay.
The other one is the nature as it is,
mm-hmm.
as it is, non-fabricated, non-contrived. That state of awareness is the real Buddha, the primordial Buddhahood.
Yeah.
The second one is with all the abundance and with ups and downs and all that.
Yeah.
Then third one, in order to, the third dimension, the third layer is manifestation. Someone holding a combination of that two, to wealth as well as something that's non-contrived.
Okay.
So in order to teach those values, you know?
Yeah.
So someone comes as a, in the form of a person, or it may even be that you will see a deadly falling and suddenly you see, oh, life is so effervescent, you know, like they're volatile.
Yeah.
You must take it easy.
Yeah.
So some things are non-tangible, you know, some are tangible.
Yeah.
So Buddhism comes in many different layers, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in terms of geography,
mm-hmm.
which countries in this area are important for Buddhism?
Well,
all areas, I don't want to say countries, areas that are...
Traditionally, I think because Buddhist ideas or Buddhist culture were actually originated in India and the Himalayan, Tibet, Himalayan region. And over in the later centuries, they moved down to the sutric part, the first, you know, the fundamental foundational teachings went to Sri Lanka, you know, Burma, Bangladesh, and even Indonesia, and all the way down, right?
Yeah.
But then later, you know, because of persecution of the Buddhist practitioners or monks in India, then they fled to Tibet or some to Nepal or Kashmir, all those sites. So that's how, like, the Buddhism actually disappeared in India. And then it went on to the China, Japan, Korea, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So later now, I think after 1970s, after the Tibet lost their country,
yes,
then the Tibetan Buddhism actually spread to the Western countries as well.
Mm.
And it became more prominent in the Himalayan countries.
Okay.
But you still have, like, the Chinese Buddhism and the Japanese Pure Land Buddhism. I think the following is really huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Following is really huge, particularly like China itself is a, you know, very populous country, right?
Yeah.
And Japan and in the Southeast Asian countries, and then maybe quite a huge number as well in the West.
Mm-hmm.
So Pure Land Buddhists are 500 million now.
God,
yeah.
Wow.
Pure Land Buddhists alone is 500 million, you know.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I must say, like, it's not from a theistic point or trying to be discriminatory, but generally we as human beings, I think we are always reconciliatory. We are always reasonable.
Yes.
We are always rational.
Yes.
So we want happiness mm-hmm. for everybody.
Yeah.
We don't want to see unhappiness or hurt anybody, your neighbor, irrespective of which caste, creed, or race.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, like, over a period of time, I think people do, when they put their head on the pillow, they do realize that, oh, you know, was I a good human being?
You hope so, right?
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, basically every human being asks that question, irrespective of whether you are a Buddhist or not.
Yeah. That intrigues me on different levels in terms of, like, if you're a criminal or you're hurting someone, like, how do I go to bed at night and think, I did okay today.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Question here. The Four Noble Truths.
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
The Four Noble Truths are actually Buddhist teaching is all about realizing the truth.
Okay.
So as if to say, like, you, as if to say, like, you're living a life of falsity. So when you're focusing on the truth,
mm-hmm.
why you're focusing on the truth is because truth has the potential to make you free.
Yes.
Once you understand the truth,
mm-hmm.
okay, it's way, way more profound than facts.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
So facts has the tendency to attach you.
Yes.
To your ego, your mm-hmm. sense of concepts, your knowledge, anything, you know, it makes you stick. It doesn't let you go, let go. Okay.
Okay.
But truth is self-liberating. It detaches your ideas to, you know, various things.
Yes.
So therefore, you become more acceptable. You become more open, more broad-minded.
Okay.
In general human terms.
Yes.
But if now coming back to Four Noble Truths. So Buddha found out, actually he expounded that life as it is suffering.
Yeah.
In the sense that he doesn't, it has many layers. So when you say suffering, it is suffering of change. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because as you know, a boy is born, then so it goes through various stages.
Yeah.
You know, there is suffering of being born, suffering of being ill, suffering of getting old. There mm-hmm. are, you know, like dementia.
Yeah.
You know, then weakness, then ill health, then suffering of death. So when you are facing death, so many people really do go through so many pangs and sorrow, you know, mm-hmm. even before the actual death, you know,
well, yeah.
they die so many times. So Buddha said, first truth is that life is suffering.
Yeah. Okay.
But there is a way to end suffering. So he taught that antidote, the remedy to end the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you do good things and avoid bad things. Do not harm others. Do virtuous things.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually liberates you, that takes you closer to the truth.
Yeah.
So you will see the truth. Okay?
Okay.
And then he is saying that there is a path. Okay? So it's in a systematic manner. You will be shown how, like, so that it will empower you. Once you start doing it, you get to come closer to the truth.
Yeah.
And so you are more enticed and empowered to pursue that path.
Okay.
And then finally, you are really, because of the path and the teaching, you really get delivered or detached and you realize your full potential. So you bring closure to the
closure.
And,
yeah.
Yes.
It seems like a closure.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So you can come out of the illusion or the deluded mind.
Okay.
Yeah. So you gain omniscience kind of thing.
I find it so fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I've got a few more questions.
Yep.
This might seem a superficial question, really. I've heard three terms: priests, monks, lamas.
Uh-huh.
Is there a difference between the three?
Well, in a way, if you look at it, looks appears to be synonymous, but in our Bhutanese context or Buddhist context, it is different.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I think the word Lama and Lamaism has been distorted over translation.
Okay.
Over the last maybe 200 years or so, I think. So Lama in our classical understanding is that la, there are two words, right? La, ma. La, ma.
Yes.
Actually, it's la, ma. But when it is written in English, it said la, ma.
La, yeah.
And then, and loosely understood as Lamaism is like some form of specific Buddhist sect or something like that. It's not like that.
Okay.
Traditionally, over the years, what had happened is over the millennia, what has happened was the latest Buddha who passed away into Nirvana 2,500 years ago, he's just an idea. He no longer lives.
Mm-hmm.
His teachings may be there in the form of scriptures,
yeah.
but we cannot connect to him directly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he cannot mentor us.
No.
He cannot coach us. But then there is a lineage. Who, you know, Buddha taught, Buddha's disciple, like that. So
yeah.
these traditions are kept alive by the Sangha. That's called the monks.
Right.
They are the friends. They're the fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
The enlightened mind fraternity or the warrior, spiritual warrior fraternity.
Okay.
They are the monks.
Right.
Okay. And then the lamas are the supreme masters. They are the compassionate ones
mm-hmm.
who sees the delusion of the disciple and then tries to shatter one by one and put a laser focus and then the disciple gets it,
mm-hmm.
gets it and attends the path, you know,
okay.
realizes the path.
Yeah.
So realizes one's full potential.
Mm. What I find interesting about mm-hmm. what you say there is how it mixes with the modern day majority of the countries having the capitalist system, right? Mm-hmm. It seems like they contradict a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The capitalist system, which is material wealth, money,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to Buddhism, which is almost seems completely opposite. So it's weird how they sort of mix and work in countries like here or India, right?
The way I see it is, it's like because Buddha taught 84,000 teachings.
Yeah.
To cater to minimum 84,000 types of mindset.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or attitudes or behavior pattern or psychologies. So therefore, I would not think that, you know, it is diametrically opposed to each other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You can still be a billionaire and still be a true Buddhist.
Huh. Okay.
You can still be a prostitute and still be a Buddhist.
Right.
You can still be a hunter and you can still fisherman. You can still be a Buddhist. It depends because each one is so different.
Right.
Each individual is so different.
Yes.
But yes, climate change, extreme capitalism, extreme poverty, we may need to balance.
Yes.
But that's why we have the view called the middle path, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So even when you tune a guitar or something like that, right?
Yeah.
That's nature. That's not made up, right?
Right.
If it is tightened, the strings are tightened too much, you'll not produce.
Yeah.
That's too high.
Yeah.
If you do quite loose, it'll not produce good music. There's no harmony.
No.
So in order to get even a simple thing as a music, right? Mm-hmm. So therefore, that's what the true, what you call, essence of Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
So we can, it's not like they're totally opposed, but it will depend on, you know, your karma. So whether you are rich enough and actually to become rich, to use your creativity, hard work, whatever, and then you give back to society.
Of course.
But if you don't give back to society, then that may not be not much aligned with Buddhist fundamentals.
Okay. Yeah. That's very keen in today's world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. My last question is going to be, if someone's interested in exploring Buddhism, where should they start?
Well, there are schools, Buddhist schools, but that would be mostly, I should say, in classical Buddhist, using classical Buddhist texts and all that.
Yeah.
So that may be a little taxing or maybe tedious or difficult for a Westerner, general Westerner. But I see that many Westerners now come to India where like they learn the alphabets and they start right from the literature, philosophy, you know, and then they come on to do the practice.
Yeah.
So theory and practice combined together.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as I know, maybe we have this Simtokha Buddhist College Institute, where I saw a few Westerners who actually are already, you know, learning Buddhist teachings or for that matter, even meditation and philosophy.
Yeah.
But I cannot say for sure as of now if there is a separate institute totally dedicated and devoted to accept such students.
It's interesting, right? Because I think those guys from the Western world would have probably quit their job, I imagine, right? Because it probably takes time to start, learn, and get into the mode of being.
And one thing, you know, it's fairly practical one. I'm saying it from, it's more pragmatic. It's like people embrace Buddhist ideas when they are fairly at a mature state of mind.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, now they almost see that the suffering is going on and on.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, the dog chasing his tail kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there's no end to, no matter how much you earn, it's almost like drinking salt water. you cannot quench your thirst.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
So then they say, what am I doing? You know, why am I, you know, struggling so much?
Yeah.
And then they see like, oh, maybe there is a path. Well, let me try. So that is the stage. Youth, even here in Bhutan, they are, most of them, they would still get attracted to those noise and colors and music and all that.
Yeah.
Not the deeper, profound ways of life.
You know?
So Buddhism needs to, there are layers, as I said. One is very, a lot of code of conduct, shave your head, you know, walk in a certain way, beg your food, always pray and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next level would be all sentient beings are, have always been your parents at one form or the other in your countless or million lifetimes.
Yeah.
So you cannot hurt them. You must help them.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have come to the Vajrayana, the highest vehicle, where you see like you have a very purified perception where you see everything as Buddha. You see every sound as Buddhist music or whatever, you know, the place as Buddha field. So therefore, like there's no prejudice, there's no filter. So then like everything is so free.
It's free, yeah.
Yes,
freedom.
Primordially pure.
Yeah.
So there's nothing like impurity.
Yeah.
So so therefore, like, in a way, anything goes, you know?
Yeah. That's amazing. Okay, yeah. I was only going to say to finish about the guys who asked, like, what am I doing with my life?
Mm-hmm.
I think when you get older,
yeah.
I don't know if you agree with this, time becomes an issue.
Yeah.
Because you realize that the amount of money you earn doesn't matter because you're spending so much time getting it.
Right, right.
So what's the point getting something where you can't even use it to get your time back? It seems like a weird loop of you can't win.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what I've realized going into my late 30s, shall we say, that time is an issue now where I don't want to spend it wasting it trying to earn money. So not really related to Buddhism, it's just related to life.
Yeah.
I think.
Sorry for interrupting, but the thing is, you know, in the Western context, time is always considered very linear.
Yes.
Whereas in our context, the way we know time here is cyclical.
Yes.
Cyclical.
Yeah.
And then in the Western context, the time is considered finite.
Yeah.
In our case, past, present, and future is in the now. It's in the now.
Yeah, I understand.
So I say like, oh, I'll make that much money. I'll put man on the Mars or any other Saturn, or I'll, you know, like put a data center like that's like $10 trillion or whatever, you know. That's very short-sighted, if I may say so, in the Buddhist context of time.
Yes.
Because there's no future or there's no past. Everything happens in the now.
Mm. That means you're always present.
So, yes. So, including the theories such as Big Bang.
Yeah.
Big Bang never happened in the past. Or is not. Big Bang is happening in the now.
Yes.
It's happening in the now. Okay. We have a fixed mindset, right?
Yeah.
Because time is linear.
Yeah.
It goes from 0 to 12 or 24, whatever. Because at the end of the day, you know, in our day-to-day life, you know, in a normal human life, you know, no matter how sophisticated you want to say or bring any amalgamation of Greek or Roman word or Sanskrit word or whatever may like to coin new words. But in essence, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You are saying Google, right? Google is a Sanskrit word. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So many, nine zeros. So it's saying billions, something like that, right?
Yeah.
So it's always had that. It's like trying to stretch the human imagination of some sort, but it's still limited. It's still limited. When you have a linear thing, when you say you don't transcend, you cannot transcend beyond suffering. If someone is right, it means someone is wrong.
Yes.
So there is always an argument.
Yeah.
So you will never be free.
Yeah.
So when you are between right and wrong, so then there is freedom.
Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Win-win.
Yeah.
Gosh, nobody
loses, really, the way I see it. And everyone is happy.
That's the dream, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, so I'm actually intrigued by John Lennon's Imagine, you know.
Great
There's
song.
No heaven.
You know?
I think he was far-sighted. He got that clarity.
Yeah.
So he transcended time, he transcended national boundaries, he transcended race, human race, mm-hmm. you know, religion, whatever.
Yeah.
So that's what a good human being should be.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Not Buddhist or any other East, you know, it's just a word.
Yes.
Yeah, we are human beings at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
We need compassion. We need love. We need kindness. We need harmony, peace. Mm-hmm. When you actually distinguish on the defined certain thing, it always sets a boundary.
Mm.
So it doesn't break the boundary. It creates a boundary. It creates a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Concepts are walls.
There's so much more we could talk about. But I should finish here. But I'd like to thank you for your wisdom.
My pleasure. I could talk to you all day. I know so little, and I'm still, I'd like to think I'm a novice. I keep learning.
We all do.
More than the textbook learning or reading, my experiential learning through loneliness, as I said, it gives me much more freedom and liberty.
Mm-hmm.
A sense of detachment.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, through you, some of my thoughts or experiences get transferred to your audience.
Yes, and I'll be keen to see what they think.
Right.
Amazing. Yeah, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. I want to shake
my hand. Pleasure.
And that's it for this episode on Winging It. I hope you took something from this episode, whether it sparked a new idea, offered a different perspective, or simply let you feel part of the journey. If you enjoyed it, leaving a quick rating or review on your podcast app really helps the show reach new listeners. And if you know someone who might connect with this episode, share it by word of mouth or social media. It makes a huge difference. Head to voiceescape.com for more amazing travel podcasts as well. And thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode. Until then, keep winging it. Want travel inspiration fast? Travel in 10 delivers expert tips and must-visit spots hosted by David Brody and Tim Johnson. They've explored over 145 countries. Find it at voiceescape.com.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I... I'm Nick. Discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick single topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.